50% of the shops are closed. Although Taliban are still on the outskirts, people are scared.
Afghan city in panic after news of Taliban advance. It's Wednesday, August 11th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, North Korea condemns U.S.-South Korea military exercises. Experts warn Ukraine's closer ties with China may hurt ties with U.S. U.S. airstrikes in support of Afghan government troops continue for now. Scientists say it's not too late to reverse global warming. Call for tougher COVID lockdowns in Sydney. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Panic gripped northern Afghanistan's famous city, Mazar-e-Sharif, Monday after news of a Taliban advance. VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports from Kabul that Taliban have overrun five northern or northeastern capitals since Saturday. Because of the security risks to journalists, footage in her report was recorded by cell phone or taken from viral social media videos.
People fleeing from a burning city. These images filmed in Kunduz city on Sunday led to panic in nearby Afghan city Mazar-e-Sharif on Monday. The Taliban claimed they were attacking Mazar-e-Sharif, the capital of Balkh province, from four sides Monday morning. The claim was false. The only fighting reported was some 20 kilometers from the city, but the rumor traveled fast.
We hear Taliban are coming into Mazar city. It is impacting our business. People are escaping. 50% of the shops are closed. Although Taliban are still on the outskirts, people are scared.
The usually busy marketplaces shut down. Busy streets in central Mazar were deserted. People lined up in banks and at ATM machines to withdraw money. It did not help that another capital, Aibak of Samangan province, was overrun by Taliban on Monday. It was the sixth provincial capital to collapse since Friday. Five of the six are in the north or northeast of the country. The militants now control most of the north. The fear in Mazar was palpable.
I have a shop, but nothing is selling. Taliban are coming. The city is collapsing. Nobody is buying anything. People are worried that the Taliban can come any time. Anyone with money has escaped. The poor are left behind.
Witnesses said that during the panic in Mazar, they saw few security forces. Anyone who could afford it tried to escape. Travel agents reported double the business they have on a normal day. Even airlines doubled their flights.
Usually we have 2 to 3 flights daily from Mazar to Kabul, but it has increased to 5 to 6. In the past, the ticket was $85 one way, but now it has increased to $113. Since the situation deteriorated today, 60 to 70 people arrived in my agency to buy tickets to fly to a secure area.
In the afternoon, the Afghan military released a video on social media saying it had repulsed the Taliban attack on Dedadi district on the outskirts of Mazar. The northern capital is safe for now, but the fear and panic in the north remains. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
The violence comes as the United States, along with regional and international stakeholders, have gathered in Doha, Qatar, to press the Afghan parties to the conflict to urgently seek a negotiated settlement to the South Asian country's long war. Be sure to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. U.S. provides $50 million in humanitarian aid to Myanmar. China and Cambodia urge to rethink dam compensation packages. As activists increase pressure, Beijing Olympic sponsors remain largely silent. Singapore turns sewage into clean drinkable water. Red Cross treats 4,000 Afghans wounded by war in August. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA VOA Asia continues. North Korea has condemned U.S.-South Korea military exercises that begin this week, saying the drills show the need for Pyongyang to develop more of its own military capabilities. The computer-simulated exercises are being scaled back amid the coronavirus pandemic and fears they could upset North Korea, which recently reopened communication hotlines with the South. But no matter the size or form, North Korea views the military training as an act of aggression. Libby Hogan has more in this Reuters report.
The U.S. and South Korea will face new security threats for going ahead with annual joint military drills. Those are the words of Kim Yo-jong on Tuesday, sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and herself a high-ranking official. A statement from her ran on North Korean state media, where she called the drills unwelcome and self-destructive. Kim Yo-jong accused South Korea of, quote, treacherous treatment shortly after a hotline between Pyongyang and Seoul was reconnected in a bid to ease tensions. The South and the U.S. began preliminary training on Tuesday and start wider-scale computer simulations next week. Nearly 30,000 U.S. troops remain in South Korea, a legacy of the Korean War that ended in 1953 with an armistice instead of a peace deal. A U.S. Department of Defense spokesman declined to comment on Kim's statement Tuesday. A spokesman for South Korea's Defense Force also declined to comment on the drills, but said the two countries will still discuss the timing, scale, and method of the regular exercises. The drills have been scaled back in recent years to help talks aimed at dismantling Pyongyang's nuclear and missile programs in return for U.S. sanctions relief.
That was Libby Hogan reporting for Reuters. Still ahead on VOA Asia, experts warn that Ukraine's closer ties with China may hurt its ties with the U.S. and have other negative consequences. Happening now in Asia, a Chinese court on Tuesday rejected an appeal by Canadian Robert Schellenberg, whose sentence in a drug case was increased to death, while Beijing was trying to pressure Canada to release a detained executive of tech giant Huawei. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. While Ukraine's president prepares for a visit to Washington, Kyiv is accepting COVID-19 vaccines from China and has signed a major infrastructure agreement with Beijing to cooperate on roads, bridges, and railway projects. Some experts worry China is attaching strings to the ventures, as VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Ukraine's Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba met with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken at the State Department to prepare for a long-awaited visit later this month by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to the White House. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba.
I came here, as Tony Ryan pointed out, to prepare the visit of my president to Washington. We want this visit to be productive, to have many deliverables, which will bring our relations to the next level.
Blinken pledged strong U.S. support for Ukraine in the face of Russian aggression.
The United States is very much committed to Ukraine's independence and sovereignty and territorial integrity. We'll talk about challenges to each of those and the work that we're doing together to stand for a strong Ukraine that can defend itself against external aggression, but also pursue vitally important process of reform to strengthen even more its democracy and its economy.
Last month, China announced it signed an agreement with Ukraine, encouraging companies and financial institutions from the two countries to cooperate on roads, bridges, and railways. Just days before, Ukraine abruptly withdrew its endorsement of a joint statement calling for a United Nations investigation into human rights abuses of Muslim Uyghurs and other minorities in the Xinjiang region of China. Several experts expressed concern that Ukraine's rapprochement with China could backfire. Stephen Blank is with the Foreign Policy Research Institute.
It has already created a backlash in certain quarters in the United States. And Ukraine depends on Washington much more than it does on Beijing. And Beijing is not going to go out of its way to help Kyiv.
Others saw a direct link between Ukraine's reversal on China's repression of ethnic Muslim Uyghurs, which Beijing denies, and the agreements on investment and vaccines. John Herbst of the Atlantic Council.
We saw that in connection with the Ukrainian position on China's genocide against the Uyghurs. What China's doing there is easily the greatest human rights violation happening in the world today. But Ukraine decided, well, maybe it did not need to join a group criticizing China over this in order to maintain a more profitable business relationship.
Other experts say Ukraine was likely frustrated by the U.S. not doing more to stop Germany from building Russia's controversial Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, which Kyiv strongly opposes.
The announcement is more in tune with showcasing Ukraine's displeasure with the United States. But again, I think this is a dangerous game if the Ukrainians are playing in this way. I think they need to stand up for human rights abuses everywhere in the world, just as the United States stands up for the abuse of Ukrainian citizens' human rights in occupied regions of eastern Ukraine.
Most experts agree that China's infrastructure loans and vaccine sharing are part of Beijing's overall geopolitical strategy. Beijing denies that it engages in what is called vaccine diplomacy, leveraging the supply of critical COVID-19 shots to exert political pressure. The State Department says life-saving vaccines must never be used as a tool in that way. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
VOA's Ukrainian service asked Foreign Minister Kuleba if forging closer ties with China is a departure from Ukraine's integration with the West. He said, quote, "This is not a reversal. We are part of the Western world. We are developing as part of this world. But trade with China is an objective reality. And even though the United States has a principled security policy toward China, trade is moving in its own direction. And our relations with China are developing based on this model." Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, a form of China's anti-sanctions law will be implemented in Hong Kong, according to the city's leader, Carrie Lam, adding new regulatory pressure on international companies. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. On Monday, U.S. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said Americans view the conflict in Afghanistan as up to Afghan political and military leaders to win or lose. He said the fight on the ground is clearly not going in the right direction. The U.S. says it will continue airstrikes in support of government forces until the Biden administration's final withdrawal 3 weeks from now. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden spoke with International Edition host Steve Miller about the U.S.'s ongoing role.
Jeff, what exactly do we know about the deployment of U.S. aircraft in support of Afghan forces?
Well, we know that the U.S. has been conducting airstrikes for weeks now, even while the withdrawal has gone along and is almost complete, as it has been for a while now. The U.S. has had some of its platforms, and we're being told now that a lot of it is coming down to its AC-130 gunships and its MQ-9 Reaper drones, flying over Afghanistan from afar, from places elsewhere in the Middle East, to come in doing patrols and basically helping out in areas where the U.S. is able to communicate with Afghan troops on the ground. And the focus has been, for the most part, in areas like Kandahar, Herat, and Lashkargah, where the Taliban have been pressing offensives, and the Afghan government has sent some of its special forces to hold those key areas. Of course, at the same time, the Taliban have been pushing their offensive in other areas, and according to the Pentagon, in about the last 72 hours, have taken a total of about 5 provincial capitals. So U.S. air power is coming down. They also have B-52s. That are coming from Al Udeid Air Base in the Middle East. And they also have F-18s, Stryker bombers that are able to launch from the carrier strike group that the U.S. has positioned in the Persian Gulf. But again, these are long-range flights, and so there's an impact, but in some ways a limited impact in terms of helping the Afghan forces on the ground that are facing just what appears to be a sweep, a tsunami of Taliban forces trying to overrun key areas.
Speaking of the onslaught of Taliban offensives, has the Pentagon commented directly on the status of the fighting in Afghanistan? Have they said, are they going to do anything more, perhaps with more of the so-called over-the-horizon attacks?
Well, everything right now is over the horizon. There is no other option. The U.S. presence in Afghanistan, in terms of its military presence, really limited to Kabul and the embassy area, and then also to the international airport outside of Kabul. And that's it. There are no more airstrikes that can come from within Afghanistan. So everything is coming from afar right now in terms of what the U.S. can do to help out. In terms of how that fight's been going, the Pentagon today said it is not going in the right direction, according to the press secretary who was briefing reporters.
That was VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden speaking with International Edition host Steve Miller. Making headlines in Asia, authorities started vaccinating Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh against COVID-19 Tuesday as the Delta variant is driving an infection surge in the country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, massive cuts to greenhouse gas emissions are urgently required if the world is to avoid catastrophic warming. That according to the new report from the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Its findings have been described as a code red for humanity. Henry Ridgewell reports from London for VOA.
On the Greek island of Evia, residents flee their homes beneath a sky of burning red as fires consume pristine forests turned to tinder by searing summer heat. This is just one of hundreds of intense fires burning across Greece, Turkey, and Italy, as summer temperatures have topped 45 degrees Celsius. The message from scientists, climate change is here. Professor Levent Kurnaz is a climate scientist at Boğaziçi University in Istanbul.
The Mediterranean will be having these forest fires all the time. Therefore, I mean, this is just the beginning. It's going to get much worse.
Intense heat and drought have triggered fires from the Mediterranean to Siberia to California. The report, compiled by 200 scientists from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, says temperatures have already risen by 1.1 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The United Nations Secretary General described the findings as code red for humanity. Co Barrett from the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is a vice chair of the IPCC.
This report tells us that each of the past four decades has been the warmest on record since pre-industrial times. Further, it is indisputable that human activities are causing climate change. Human influence is making extreme climate events, including heat waves, heavy rainfall, and droughts, more frequent and severe.
The report warns that global average temperatures will hit 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels by 2030 on current trajectories, the limit agreed at the Paris Climate Summit in 2015 and seen as a tipping point by many scientists. That's 10 years earlier than previous forecasts. The report adds that sea level rises of up to 2 meters by the end of the century can't be ruled out, threatening millions of people living in coastal areas. And the Arctic is likely to see at least one ice-free summer by 2050. But scientists emphasize there is a way out. The worst scenarios can be prevented and global warming reversed with drastic cuts to global emissions. Professor Bill Collins is an author of the IPCC report and a climate scientist at Reading University.
These aren't just small changes we can make. These aren't just sort of tinkering at the edges. These really mean whole-scale changes of the way we use and consume energy. Carbon dioxide is the main one which we need to get to zero emissions by the middle of the century. But we've also shown that methane is an important gas to reduce. it's caused maybe as much as half a degree of the warming we've already seen.
With the United States rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement under President Joe Biden, scientists hope there will be added momentum as world leaders gather in November for the COP26 Global Climate Summit in Britain. Biden's envoy for climate, John Kerry, said Monday that all major economies must commit to aggressive climate action during this critical decade. Again, Professor Bill Collins.
It's actually commissioned by the world's governments, this report. So we're providing information that they want, that they say they need to make political decisions.
Those decisions will decide whether humanity can avert catastrophic climate change. Its impact is already being felt in many parts of the world. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A leading epidemiologist and an advisor to the World Health Organization is calling for a nighttime curfew and daily testing for workers to bring Sydney's COVID-19 outbreak under control. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
With a lockdown not producing the desired results in Australia's largest city, it's time to implement even stricter restrictions. That's the opinion of Professor Mary Louise McClaws, an epidemiologist from the University of New South Wales. She's also a member of a World Health Organization expert panel on COVID-19. The state government in New South Wales, of which Sydney is the capital city, has said that higher rates of vaccination, up to 80% of the population, are the key to the gradual easing of restrictions. But McClaws says the benefits of mass inoculations will take time to reduce the spread of the Delta variant.
We're not going to get out of this with the vaccine. We're certainly going to prevent deaths and hospitalisation, and then eventually we'll start seeing a wonderful public health impact on reduced spread. But we do need more testing at the worksite, daily testing. We need night curfews to stop people wanting to sneak out at night and go and visit friends or extended families.
State authorities in New South Wales concede they may be forced to abandon the policy of trying to eliminate the virus because the spread of infections in Sydney is proving hard to stop, despite Australia's strictest lockdown. Instead of trying to crush the virus, officials say Australia might have to live with it and hope the population would be protected by mass vaccinations. Indeed, New South Wales set a new daily record Tuesday with 356 recently diagnosed COVID-19 infections. State Premier Gladys Berejiklian is pleading with residents, especially those in Sydney's virus hotspots, to get vaccinated.
Those that are unvaccinated of any age continue to be vulnerable. And with case numbers where they are, unfortunately, if you live in those local government areas of concern, there is a high chance now that you could get the virus. Please protect yourself, your family, your loved ones, your community by getting vaccinated.
Australia's inoculation rates are much lower than other countries. About 22% of eligible Australians older than 16 have been fully inoculated. There have been problems with supply, but crucially, there have been widespread concerns in the country about possible side effects of the AstraZeneca vaccine. A third vaccine, Moderna, has been approved by the Therapeutic Goods Administration, Australia's official medical regulator. 1 million doses are expected to arrive in September of the 10 million doses ordered. The AstraZeneca and Pfizer treatments were approved earlier this year. The country's virus strategy includes the closure of its international borders to most foreign travellers, strict lockdowns and mass testing. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.